we've got to get rid of these things. They can't just continue to litter our waterways and beaches and everything else.
Legislation to address the problem of derelict vessels. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 2nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, crews work to contain an oil spill north of Kodiak.
I think because it's old, it's going to be harder for us to recover it. On the other hand, because it's old, it's not as gassy.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska Anchorage is investing in Alaska by equipping students with the knowledge and tools for academic success. These students will go on to be the doctors, nurses, teachers, engineers, and artists of Alaska who shape the future of the state by bringing new solutions, inventions, and ideas to the table. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More information at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA.
State lawmakers are considering a bill aimed at tackling abandoned boats that litter Alaska's waterways. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
Juneau Harbor Master Dave Borg says the problem is statewide.
Derelict vessels, abandoned derelict vessels is a huge issue. I think if you look at it holistically, the fishing fleet's aging. You know, we've got tons of old wood hull boats and people tend to have a tendency just walking away from them.
Currently, federally documented vessels of at least 5 tons aren't required to be registered for the state. Senate Bill 92 would change that. Smaller vessels would be required to have a title issued by the DMV that's kept in the state's database. The bill's sponsor is Senator Peter Michicki, a Soldotna Republican.
The intent of this bill is that you understand the ownership of the vessel and you can start dealing with it years before what we've been doing now, so long before it ends up on the bottom.
Because right now, tracking ownership isn't easy. Current law only requires a bill of sale, even one written on a cocktail napkin. Juneau Port Director Carl Yucatel told the Senate Finance Committee that on Thursday.
As you can imagine, people pass down hand-me-downs and vessels are traded in bars or for a buck, and it kind of ends up that people with the least resources have to have the biggest bill to pay at the end of the useful life of these vessels.
An earlier vision of SB 92 would have required vessels longer than 30 feet to carry insurance for the cost of cleanup and recovery, but that was quietly removed last month by the Senate Resources Committee. SB 92 would streamline impound procedures. Current law is complex and makes a distinction between abandoned and derelict vessels. That would change. It also adds civil penalties that supporters say would be easier to enforce than criminal charges in current law. Senator Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, said he recognized that requiring titles for boats will help the state at least track vessel ownership to determine liability.
This is a step. It's not the answer. We need to find a way to help folks who own these older vessels before they become a more serious problem than they are right now.
In Juneau, more than 30 vessels in poor condition have been impounded and ordered destroyed by harbor officials since 2014. That figure doesn't include those seized, salvaged, and auctioned. Juneau Harbor Master Dave Borg said the status quo isn't working and wrecks keep piling up.
We've got to get rid of these things. They can't just continue to litter our waterways and beaches and everything else. So this will help to address that.
Lawmakers haven't heard any formal opposition so far. A companion bill in the House, introduced by Representative Paul Seaton, a Homer Republican, is awaiting hearings in his chamber's Finance and Fisheries Committees. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Cody Strath of Fairbanks will be the first musher out on the trail for the start of the 2018 Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race. Bib number one was dedicated to this year's honorary musher, Joe Reddington Jr., who passed away in August of 2017 and is known as the father of the Iditarod. Strath and all the other 66 registered mushers drew numbers from a traditional muckluck boot during last night's Mushers Banquet in Anchorage. Besides featuring notable mushers competing in this year's race, like Allie Zirkel, Mitch Seavey, and Martin Boozer, the Iditarod opening festivities at the Denina Center also included speeches from Governor Bill Walker, former musher Mike Williams Sr., and Nome's Mayor Richard Beneville. The ceremonial start of the 2018 Iditarod is scheduled for tomorrow at 10 a.m. in Anchorage, followed by the race restart in Willow the next day. Straith is set to leave the starting line at 2 p.m. in Willow, with Mats Peterson leaving 2 minutes behind him. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, plans to protest the start of the race in Anchorage tomorrow morning. Former Iditarod champion Jeff King sat down with me recently to talk about the race, his career, and his feelings about the animal rights activists who are against racing sled dogs. King says he's sure most of them are good people who want to do the right thing, and he says a few decades ago, protests helped make the race better.
I'm not bashful in saying that the Iditarod has improved in the early 90s because of the pressure we got from animal rights organizations to look closer at what we were doing. And there were places that needed improvement. And the Iditarod's safety record for the dogs, mortality is different than it was 30 years ago. Now the mortality of a dog in the Iditarod is less than the licensed pet population of Anchorage. So we're doing a great job. But sometimes it takes criticism to look inside yourself and go, how can I do this better? So I hope that whatever it is we can do better, whether it's board selection, drug testing, I have been a huge advocate for the last many, many years that any dog death in the Iditarod should be cause for withdrawal of a musher. The only dog I've ever had in my care that died was hit by a snow machine a couple years ago. Many people would say, well, it wasn't your fault. Wasn't it? There's been other ones where, you know, it's like, is it your fault to get hit by a car if you walk in the street? You go, well, you know, you need to wear reflective clothing. Could have I had more lights on the dogs? What could I do? And besides, those are extremely rare. My point is that I don't believe there have been anything intentional, but we know that when you raise the bar, you perform better.
Do you hope to just keel over off the runners at some point in the far distant future? Or do you think you'll quit racing, especially the longer races, at some point and just focus on breeding and your tourism business and training?
I clearly have lost my motivation to race at the same level of intensity that I know I did. I still enjoy the dogs. I'm pretty sick of being cold. And so I will use the general mantra of, if it's more fun than it isn't, I'll keep doing it. But as soon as it's the opposite, I won't. I do take tremendous satisfaction in knowing that dogs and dog mushing continue to light up the imagination and the enthusiasm of another generation behind me or two. And I am getting huge kicks out of helping the next generation learn. They make me feel great because I know something they don't. They want to know it. So I get tremendous satisfaction out of mentoring the next generation of mushers.
Musher Jeff King has been racing the Iditarod since 1981 and has won 4 times. Set up for tomorrow's ceremonial Iditarod start in Anchorage means dumping thousands of pounds of snow on downtown streets. Sled dog teams set off in a festival-like atmosphere on the city streets and trails for an 11-mile run that does not count toward their official race time. Downtown street closures started today in Anchorage. Road maintenance crews begin bringing in truckloads of snow this evening and will work overnight smoothing out the downtown portion of the course. Maintenance manager Paul Van Lindingham says they need around 250 dump truck loads of snow to spread out over city streets. Anchorage has gotten plenty of suitable snow in the last couple of weeks. Van Lindingham says their main stash is at the city airport of Merrill Field, where there's an abundance of gravel-free snow.
And I know a lot of people don't understand the fact we get all this snow. Well, we spend a couple of days removing it, and then we bring in more snow on top of the streets. But for the dogs and for the event and everything, you know, you really do need to bring in good fresh snow for the track to set up right, to give the dogs a quality track to run on and just make it a better event.
It's a bit of a role reversal. Crews that have been busy around the clock clearing snow off city streets are suddenly dumping it back onto the roadways. But Van Lindingham says the street maintenance workers enjoy being a part of the Iditarod.
It's something that breaks up the monotony for the guys and gals doing the work out there. I mean, it's a big event for the community, for the state. You know, Iditarod, world famous sled dog race. So it's exciting for all of us to be a part of the festivities.
After leaving downtown, mushers head onto city trails groomed by parks and rec workers and volunteers. City streets will be closed for Iditarod, are set to reopen at 7 p.m. on Saturday night. At the same time as the ceremonial start tomorrow, the Alaska House Finance Committee will hear public testimony on the proposed budget for the fiscal year starting in July. The hearing will occur between 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Anchorage area legislators also will hold a public meeting tomorrow from 2 to 4 p.m. at University of Alaska Anchorage's Rasmussen Hall. They're asking for public input on the budget and other issues. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, musher Alan Moore reflects on his Arkansas roots and Alaska accomplishments.
It's a passion, number one, but when you can turn your passion into a vocation, it seemed like that would be everyone's dream.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you.
After weather delays, response crews have made it to an oil spill roughly 50 miles north of the city of Kodiak. On Monday morning, according to a recent situation report from the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, high winds caused a spill of up to 3,000 gallons of fuel at a facility on Port Williams on the southern end of Shuyak Island. As stated in the report, a dock collapsed and much of a building along with a fuel bladder fell into the water. The facility's caretaker originally drew attention to it. Jeff Merrill, the state on-scene coordinator with DOC, says the bladder contents were Bunker C fuel oil, a heavy oil that may have been there for some time.
I think because it's old, it's going to be harder for us to recover it. On the other hand, because it's old, it's not as gassy. A lot of the light ends have evaporated out of it, so it's a little probably a little safer from a worker safety perspective. Certainly, we're not seeing a lot of sheening, extending from it and out into the port.
Merrill says they'll be sampling the oil to learn more. The Coast Guard has contracted with Alaska Shadow on containment. Merrill says they conducted an initial site assessment.
The oil is fairly well contained in the immediate vicinity of the where the building collapsed. We're not seeing oil spreading throughout Port William or into Shuyak Strait. It seems to be pretty limited to the immediate vicinity. It's in the tide line, and there's a lot of debris in the area.
A Coast Guard spokesperson this afternoon said all four containment vessels were on scene and using a boom to clean up the spill. Merrill says they conducted an agency overflight Thursday with federal and state government representatives scanning for potential wildlife effects. He says they did not observe any oiled wildlife so far, but it remains a concern. Shuyak is mostly state parkland and natural habitat for sea otters, stellar sea lions, and a number of animals like seabirds. Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad teams concluded their recovery efforts yesterday for a Ketchikan man caught Sunday in an avalanche on Dude Mountain. Alaska State Trooper James Kimura confirmed Thursday evening that the body of 39-year-old Marvin Scott had been recovered. Jeffrey Kiefer of KVRS says earlier on Thursday, team members took advantage of the break in weather to get back on the mountain. They were helicoptered to a spot above the avalanche debris field and started digging test holes to determine the snowpack's stability.
The results from those pits were okay enough for us to proceed downhill towards the avalanche sites.
On Thursday evening, Kiefer said the teams finished their work, hiked down the trail, and were headed down Brown Mountain Road on snow machine. Kiefer added that KVRS appreciates the community's support and other search efforts.
The situation obviously is a tragedy. And a lot of ours were actually, friends and acquaintances with the victim, and it hits everybody really hard. And as our people are out, working in the field to, get the job done, we really appreciate the community support that we've had with the operation.
At about noon on Sunday, 39-year-old Marvin Scott was snowboarding on Dude Mountain with a friend when the avalanche was triggered. Scott was buried in the snow. The friend tried to dig Scott out using Scott's avalanche beacon as a guide, but wasn't able to find him. Without cell phone coverage, the friend had to hike out before he could call for help. It was too late on Sunday to launch a recovery effort. Teams tried on Monday, but bad weather forced them back down the mountain and kept them off until Thursday. Are Alaska orcas hurting their brethren in Puget Sound? That's what one Washington State scientist says. It's all related to the size and population of king salmon. KOW in Seattle's John Ryan reports on the case of the shrinking Chinooks.
The biggest salmon, the Chinooks, used to get so big that it's hard to believe the old photos now. Fishermen stand next to Chinooks almost as tall as they are, sometimes weighing 100 pounds or more.
It's not impossible that we see individuals of that size today, but it's much, much rarer.
Jan Olberger is a research scientist at the University of Washington. He's been tracking the downsizing of salmon. Chinooks have been shrinking in numbers and in size for a long time. A century's worth of dam building, overfishing, and other causes has cut the average Chinook in half, size-wise. The dam building and overfishing have tailed off, but Chinooks have been shrinking even faster in the past 15 years. Older and bigger fish are mostly gone. Olberger thinks orcas, as well as humans, are behind this recent change.
There is a large number of resident killer whales out there that really target Chinook, and they target the large Chinook.
Salmon born in Washington spend most of their lives out at sea. They're often in Alaskan waters where orcas aplenty await. That means Puget Sound orcas are having their lunch stolen by their more successful northern relatives. The remaining smaller salmon lay fewer eggs. That could mean trouble for Chinook populations and for all the mammals who want to catch them, whether they have fingers or fins. In Seattle, I'm John Ryan.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The South Central Alaska Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss possible federal subsistence fish and shellfish proposals and other subsistence-related issues, and invites public participation at a meeting March 6th and 7th, starting at 8:30 a.m. at the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association in Anchorage. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, South to North. The Iditarod is upon us, and those who follow the race know that dog mushing is home to some colorful characters. It might seem strange that one of Alaska's top mushers has a southern accent, but when one reporter from Arkansas heard Alan Moore's southern drawl, she immediately recognized one of her own. Alaska Public Media correspondent Zoe Rome has more.
It's 40 below and snowing. I'm huddled next to a wood-burning stove inside an old schoolhouse in Eagle, Alaska, a small village in the bush with a population of about 200 or 300, depending on the season. It's a strange place to find myself, a reporter from Arkansas chasing sled dogs as they race across Alaska and Canada, which is why I'm even more surprised to run into a fellow Arkansan and his 14 Alaskan Huskies.
Well, you're not from here, are you? I guess I haven't lost my accent, people tell me.
Alan Moore, sometimes known as the Southern Gentleman of Mushing, is an elite sled dog runner whose path from small-town Arkansas to mushing fame surprises even him.
It does not make sense. Redneck from Arkansas comes from there to here running dogs.
Moore grew up in Arkansas's northeast corner, in a small town called Manila. He has always been active and loved being outside. Most of all, he loved animals. Moore studied wildlife management at Arkansas State University, and eventually went on to work for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, tagging ducks and counting deer. One thing he didn't like was Arkansas summer heat.
When I left Arkansas, it was 100 plus degrees with the heat index and all that. I wanted to go where it was cool.
So he sold almost everything he owned and loaded the rest into his pickup truck, along with his two young daughters, Bridget and Jennifer, and drove to the coldest place he knew, Alaska. He was drawn north by childhood memories of cool blue ice and glacial streams from a visit to Anchorage, memories that drew him north to Fairbanks, where he settled with his daughters and started working in wildlife management. Almost immediately, he felt the allure of a sled and a dog team.
How you doing, Rodney? How you doing? Just take it easy. Just take it easy.
First thing we saw in Fairbanks was these little dog races. Kids with one dog, one little sled, went around this one little oval track. So what do you think she wanted to do? Because I got a dog, I got a sled, and I had to help her train this one dog, and she did it for the first winter and enjoyed it so much that then her older sister, she wanted to do it, so I had to get another dog. So.
But he just goes round and round and round and round because he's so excited to go.
He was hooked.
It is addictive. I wish everyone could experience, though.
He started competing in sprints, working his way up to 100, 300, and finally 1,000-mile distances.
It's cool knowing how people traveled 100-plus years ago. That's the only means of transportation they had. And when we go through these isolated places, even today, it looks no different.
He met his wife, Allie Zirkel, and they started work building houses and then selling them, using the meager profits to run dogs all winter long. Allie, an experienced musher herself with multiple second-place Iditarod finishes, won a smaller race, the Yukon Quest. Zirkel used the winnings to build herself a house. They started a kennel, SP Kennel, to grow their passion for mushing. After a few more racing successes, sponsorships started rolling in, allowing Moore to pursue his love of mushing full-time.
Here we are running dogs for a living, so you can't beat that. It's a passion, number one, but when you can turn your passion into a vocation, it seems like that would be everyone's dream.
For Moore, mushing combines many of his favorite things, a passion for the outdoors, curiosity about fitness, and a love of animals. There's no relationship quite like that between a musher and their team. Even Moore, who's been running dogs for 20-plus years, struggles to describe it.
Sled dogs, I don't know how to pinpoint it, but it's just different. It's just like you and a sled dog are the same. I mean, you sleep together, you do everything together.
It's this relationship, this passion for canine companionship, that's fueled much of Moore's success.
Let's welcome Mr. Alan Moore.
It's not just surprising to find an Arkansan on the back of a dog sled. Moore is really, really good at it.
Welcome to Winehorse, Mr. Moore.
Aside from several successful Iditarod runs, he has won the rugged Yukon Quest 3 times. He and his wife now have a kennel of almost 40 dogs.
We just love to be around dogs, and that's what it was all about. And now it's become so much more than just dogs.
For Moore's part, he's just glad to be enjoying the cooler winter weather.
Up here, if it's 40 below, 50 below, I can put more clothes on, because you can only take so much off.
For AK, I'm Zoe Rome.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from KSKA's longtime program director, BD Trentina. BD's retiring today after 39 years of public radio service. Now, that's a very long time to work somewhere, and BD has enjoyed just about all of it. Unfortunately, she did have one small, disturbing surprise just before she left.
Well, knowing that my last day was going to be coming up, I realized, geez, I've got to clean out my desk, clean out my office. So I came in on a Saturday, and I'm got the vacuum cleaner, and I'm moving some stuff around and everything, and I found some coffee beans underneath the little heater area, some old candy behind my file cabinet. And then I've got these cloth bags underneath my desk with like a change of clothes and a towel and some soap in case, you know, we get stuck here with a ongoing story. And I hadn't looked in those things for a long time. And there on the bottom of this cloth bag, I thought, oh, there's a little fuzzy keychain. I don't remember getting that. Then I looked at it a little bit closer and I thought, that's not a keychain. That's a dead mouse. It was all wrapped up, all curled up. And I looked at it and I thought, oh, what is that? And I dropped it and then I took all of the stuff that I had taken out of that bag, just like it was contaminated, and I put it back in that bag and put it upstairs and dropped it in the garbage can. I don't remember anything else that I found, certainly nothing that was that gross, but I like to think of myself as being a pretty good housekeeper, but maybe not such a good office keeper.
BD Trantina lives in Anchorage. And all jokes aside, BD, we're going to miss you more than you will likely ever know. Happy retirement, and thanks for everything. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Zoe Rome. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org/news. We had reports tonight from Jacob Resnick and Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Casey Grove and Davis Hovey in Anchorage, Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, and John Ryan in Seattle. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW. The Seward Peninsula Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss possible federal subsistence fish and shellfish proposals and other subsistence-related issues and invites public participation at a meeting starting at 10 a.m. on March 5th and 9 a.m. on March 6th at the Nome Mini Convention Center. More at 800-478-1456. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Thanks for listening today. We love being a part of your media mix. Tune in every day to catch the best in statewide news and programming. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.